This is the Talking Tigers podcast, presented by Wickles Pickles. Look for Wickles Pickles at a grocery store near you and bring those tangy and fresh pickles to your home. Now, here's Andy Burcham with another Talking Tigers podcast.
Rob Pate was first recruited to play college football as a second grader. That's right. The future Auburn safety and linebacker received his first recruiting letter from Alabama's Bill Curry in the second grade. During his time at Auburn, he played for two different coaching regimes. An all-SEC safety as a sophomore, Pate moved to hybrid linebacker when Tommy Tuberville took over as head coach. After his playing days, he wrote the book, A Tiger's Walk, Memoirs of an Auburn Football Player, and has written a second book, The Way of the Athlete, The Role of Sports in Building Character for Academic, Business, and Personal Success. He studied physical therapy at Auburn, but changed his professional course and now works as an optometrist in Auburn. Dr. Rob Pate is featured in this Talking Tigers podcast presented by Wickles Pickles.
And welcome into another edition of the Talking Tigers podcast presented by Wickles Pickles. I'm Andy Burcham. Very happy to have with us Rob Pate. Actually, Dr. Rob Pate joins us on this Talking Tigers podcast. Rob, thanks for being with us. And how are things in the Pate household these days?
Everything is good, Andy. I'm glad to be here with you. I appreciate the time and the invite. Everybody's doing okay. It's busy. I tell people I've got kids on every campus in Auburn. I've got a sophomore at the university. I've got a sophomore at the high school. I've got an eighth grader at the junior high. I have two fifth graders at Wrights Mill Road, and my wife teaches second grade at Dean Road. So we've got the entire Auburn school system covered.
What's your first memory of organized football for you?
I played Little League football at age five, Andy, Center Point Ballpark. In fact, I can remember watching my brother play as a four-year-old and wanting to get involved. My dad helped coach his Little League team. My first team was, we had 15 players. I remember they called us the Mean 15. And believe it or not, I actually played center on that football team as a five-year-old. So, I got my start on the offensive line. Cole Kublik would be proud. But moved to quarterback the next year and really just remember building team camaraderie, building great friends that I still talk to this time, having coaches that were so influential that we still have relationship to this point. And really they started molding us into the men that we are today, into the players that we would later become, the fathers that we would later become. But I had a coach named Tim Cole, who was he was from midfield. He had no children that were involved in the league. He just wanted to build into some young guys. And he was tough, Andy. I mean, he was probably the toughest coach I ever played for. But he was able to instill some traits that never went away. You know, he pushed me beyond limits that I thought that I could never go beyond and some barriers that I had erected that he was able to demolish. You know, I just had great coaching. It was a well-run organization, and it just prepared me for everything that would come later.
I don't know about you, and I certainly did not have a college athletics career like you did. My athletics ended in high school, but we didn't have Little League football when I was growing up. So my only summer was Little League baseball. But it's the fondest memory that I have as a childhood are those baseball games growing up. I mean, that summer, to me, there was nothing better than playing in Little League baseball.
No, and it was the same. And it's so different now because I coach my kids here in Auburn in youth football. And the lack of time that we spend as far as, when I was playing, Andy, we practiced 2 hours, five nights a week. We played all day on Saturday. I mean, it was literally, we devoted a tremendous amount of time and resources to it. We practice now one night a week for 2 hours, and we play a game with a running clock, and we never participate on Saturdays. In fact, Auburn may be the only place in America that on a perfectly crisp spring day, Saturday, the gates to our baseball fields are locked because there's so much going on with the university. And, I think people want to be involved with that. And there's some good to it because it gives people time to be able to spend with family, but I just shake my head sometimes that we could lock down the facilities on a beautiful Saturday. And I just know that where I grew up, those things would never happen. And it's because of what you say, the memories that you make as young kids and having your friends out there and the exploits that continue to grow as time goes on. those are some of the best moments of your life. And I'm having a great time experiencing some of that as a dad now with my kids.
Rob, when did you first start thinking about playing college football?
I don't know, Andy. I mean, I was just kind of the guy that just took one day at a time. And, you know, I guess I always had people that would tell me that they thought I could play at the next level. And in a couple of sports, you know, baseball, I played baseball as a freshman in high school. I was an all-state baseball player. I actually had a couple of teams that wanted to draft me out of high school. And had it not been for coming to Auburn. But, you know, I just like playing. I like competing. I was not a great basketball player. You know, I was a four-year starter in high school, but we didn't have a good program. But I enjoyed to play, and I enjoyed to compete, and I didn't want to leave with, you know, without doing things that if I hadn't have played, I would have regretted it. And it's just, again, it's meeting people, it's using those sports and the skills that you learn in those sports into the sports that you maybe are better at. You know, I think that that's a lost art to some degree. You know, you learn body positioning, how to put a guy on your hip and drive him out of the place, and you know, how to have soft hands in basketball. And those things translated well into football to some degree. And, you know, guys just in this day and age, everybody tries to specialize. And I get it. I've got a daughter that plays volleyball, and that's a highly specialized sport. It's year round. And if you're not participating, you feel like you're getting left by the wayside. But I hate that there's not, you know, more of a push for athletes, young kids to be multifaceted, because there's just so much room for growth. And you know, I got a letter, Andy, as a second grader from Coach Bill Curry when he was at Alabama. And that had everything to do with my football coaches in Little League being huge Alabama fans. And you got to remember, I grew up in Birmingham. But he wrote a letter to me as a second grader with all of our stats for the season, which we played 18 Little League football games. You can believe that. We were 18-0. But it had all the touchdowns and all the yards and everything. And he said in the letter, "I can't wait for you to be a future Crimson Tiger." So, you know, from that moment on, I just assumed that, I mean, I'm being recruited as a second grader, so I'm going to Alabama. Of course, things change, and you're better fits in different places, and I wouldn't trade my Auburn experience for anything. But I guess in the back of my mind, I always knew that maybe that was a possibility, but it wasn't something that was on the forefront. It was just being in each season and trying to appreciate the ride.
Do you still have the trophy from the 18-0 season?
I don't have the trophy, but I bet I have that letter somewhere. I bet my mother has it.
Talk about your recruitment. What were your options coming out of high school where you could play college football?
I started getting heavily recruited as a 10th grader, and in large part because I got pulled up as a 9th grader to play on our high school team. And they pulled me up to be the backup quarterback, but I ended up starting at tailback and safety. And we had a guy on our team that was a top 5 player in the state that played at Alabama as tight end. His name's Rod Rutledge. Actually won a Super Bowl with the New England Patriots. And because he was such a highly recruited player, and we played there in Metro Birmingham, then he had a lot of attention and people saw me at a young age. So it was really just timing, in large part, being on a team that had an elite player. Started, you know, as a 10th grader, when the recruitment letter started coming in, my coaches wanted to, and they had just gone through this with Rod, I think they wanted to make sure I didn't become egotistical, prideful, big-headed. You know, they would just say, "Hey, you got a letter today. You probably just made some recruiting list. Don't worry about it. These guys don't know who you are, really." But, you know, big letters would come in, and then we would set up trips. And I had the ability to go to places like Florida State, Notre Dame, Florida, Vanderbilt, Auburn. I had never been to Auburn, Andy, until the summer before my junior year. And my grandparents lived, you know, 20 minutes away in Dadeville. And I think purposely my parents never brought me here, because they thought I may like it too much, because my parents were Alabama fans. But I came to Terry Bowden's football camp the summer before my junior year. And as fate would have it, when one of the very first things I did was I lined up to run a 40-yard dash. They were doing all the testing for all the players that had gotten there. And they just had us in two lines, random. They didn't put us in lines. We just, hey, half you guys there, half you guys over there, and we're going to time you in a 40. And I just so happened, when I walked up to do mine, T. Martin, who was the top quarterback in the state from Mobile, came up to run his. So all the coaches came over to watch because they were watching T, because he was a top rated player. And he wasn't, a tremendously fast guy, but it gave them an opportunity to see me run. And I ran a 4.44 40 that day in cleats on grass. And Coach Kirk Crane was the guy that was timing me. And when I ran that 40, he came back to the line, and he said, "Damn, son," he said, do you know how fast you just ran?" I said, "No, sir." He said, "You just ran a 4.4. What is your name?" And I said, "My name is Rob Pate." And he said, "Well, damn, son, you're fast." And that was it, And then so I got on Auburn's radar by virtue of running next to T. Martin.
To me, you seem like a big safety. I mean, safeties even these days aren't as big as you were. I could see you almost, playing a linebacker spot now. Was that ever a factor? I mean, because you were a big guy for playing that safety spot.
It was a factor, Andy, and that's – I got recruited to play a lot of different positions because of that. In fact, Vanderbilt wanted me to play tight end. Florida wanted me to play slot receiver. They had Chris Doering at the time, and they kind of said you would play that role. A couple of places wanted me to play tailback, but most people recruited me to play linebacker. Auburn was one of the few places – that recruited me to play safety, and that was because Coach Bill Oliver knew that I had a high football IQ, and he had had some guys at other places that he saw a lot of similarities with me and being able to step in and play early. But yeah, they were on me. I'll be honest with you. When I came on my official visit, that visit ended at Coach Bowden's house the first night we were there, and they had dessert set up across his kitchen table. And I went over and I was eating some kind of brownie pudding, something that they had. And Coach Oliver was standing by the table watching me eat it. And as soon as I finished, he said, "I hope you enjoyed that, because when you get here, there's going to be no more of that." And so I was right at about 205 pounds, and he didn't want me more than that. Right. He wanted to make sure that I didn't get too big to play the position. And by the time he left, we did actually transition from a 3-4 to a 4-3 defense, and my safety position was eliminated. So I did become that hybrid rover, star position that you hear a lot about today. And I put on more weight to do that because it involved more, taking on pulling guards and fullbacks and things like that. But it was totally different for me. My entire life, from the time I was 6 until the time I was 22, I had been backpedaling, lining up 10 yards deep on the snap of the ball, and everything had been going on in front of me. And I was able to use my eyes and reaction skills and just knowledge of the game to be able to play football. And now all of a sudden I was on the line of scrimmage and everything was happening behind me. And I felt like I was playing with one arm tied behind my back. I really did. And so that was a big adjustment for me. But it's just kind of the cards we were dealt, and that's how it went. Yeah, that was the thing. Like my sophomore year, my last year with Coach Oliver, I was an all-conference player as a safety. But then my junior and senior year, I was playing that new position. And, from a statistical standpoint, it just wasn't a good fit for me. But for a guy on the flip side, like Marcus Washington, who I played with, Marcus was an outside stand-up outside linebacker in a 3-4 scheme, and his stats weren't as good. But when he got to put his hand on the ground in a 4-3 as a rush defensive end, he became a second-round draft pick. Ben Leard would have likely transferred had Coach Oliver had gotten the head job because – it just wasn't a good fit for him. Coach Oliver leaves and Tuberville comes in and Ben Leard becomes a championship quarterback and an all SEC player. So, it's timing. It's being in the right scenario. It's having coaches that believe in your abilities, and that's different for every guy.
Did you ever feel comfortable in that star backer role?
A little bit. I mean, it got to where the very first game we played, that was that Appalachian State game that we opened the season, and we were supposed to play Florida State that night. They would have beaten us 100-0. I mean, Coach, we should all be getting royalties monthly to Coach Tuberville for getting us out of that game because we weren't ready to play that game.
Right.
And Appalachian State should have beaten us that night and almost did. But I can remember at the end of that game, and I'm used to making, 8, 10, 12 tackles a game, and now I'm lined up on one side of the ball, and they ran, it seemed like, the opposite way. And I made 2 tackles that night. I just thought, this is my whole experience has just dwindled to nothing. Well, then we played Idaho the next week, and I had two interceptions. I had two sacks. I blocked a punt. I recovered an onside kick. I mean, I was everywhere. And so you got to see that, hey, you know, every matchup is going to be different. The ability to show a lot of different things. I mean, I was able to play man-to-man on slot receiver. But sometimes maybe I would cover half of the field, or sometimes maybe I was a hole player. Sometimes maybe I had to spill a pulling guard. I mean, so I think it just allowed you to be able to show your versatility. And at the end of that, I could grow to appreciate it. Really like playing for Coach Philip Lally as well. He made things great, was a tremendous coach, was a great players coach. I think that defensively, when Coach Tuberville's staff came in and Coach Bowden's staff left and we lost Coach Oliver and Pete Jenkins and some of those guys, I think the defensive personnel, we really felt like we took a step backwards from coaching. We did. I mean, it was hard to win that room over. And they did a good job with it over time, with just making us, you know, showing us how things fit together, being patient with us, and ultimately finding some success.
Wickles Pickles is proud to be the new sponsor of the Talking Tigers podcast. From Saturday sandwiches to Thanksgiving dinner, that secret 90-year-old recipe has people from all over calling to get some of those sweet and spicy jars. Look for Wickles Pickles at a grocery store near you and bring those tangy and fresh pickles to your home. Made fresh in Dadeville, Alabama.
When did you write your book, and what went into writing your book?
I wrote my book as a joke, as a dare, all right? It was one of those where you're sitting in a team meeting and a coach comes in and says something that totally opposite of what you're reading in the newspaper from what you see on the TV sportscast. I mean, there's no podcast like you're doing now. I mean, there is no social media. I mean, there's none of that's is in existence. So you're reading things and you're talking to people out in the community about, you know, you don't ever have to go to class and you guys have all this money. And you're like, these people have no idea what it's like to do this. They have no idea that I'm literally in tears because I have a physics test tomorrow and I haven't had a chance to study. You know, that they're literally have no clue that I only have $30 to budget for food this week. You know, they have no idea that my friend has a, you know, our starting linebacker has a sick parent in Miami and he can't get back to see him. You know, and so those stories start coming to the surface and you start realizing how little people actually understood the inner workings. And it was just, you know, I used to tell people when those kind of things would happen, I said, I'm gonna write a book about this. And they'd say, man, you gotta write, you gotta do that, Rob. That would be so awesome. And it wasn't the intent wasn't to let's cast a bad light on Auburn. That was never the intent. We were all grateful for Auburn. We were all knew that Auburn, our lives would be changed forever because of the experience. But I think it was just the wanting to shine a spotlight on some of the inequities, some of the things that, you know, guys shouldn't be participating on national television every week and be hungry when they do it. And that was happening. And that's been rectified at this point. You know, we were kind of in a weird transition where the guys before us, maybe their NCAA enforcement was maybe a little lax and guys had gotten some benefits that allowed them to sort of bridge the gap. But we weren't to the point that like SEC Network was here. ESPN contracts were so large. Nike, Under Armour contracts were so big that these guys had apparel. They had no need or no wants for things. We didn't have a, you know, 24-hour meal service that, you know, a training table that you could go to and eat all your meals, or a card that they would give you, you know, like a dining card that you could swipe. We didn't have any of that. We just had a scholarship check that was about $2,000 that lasted for about 3 months, and you pay your rent, and you pay your food, and you guys that are doing well enough in school get off of campus because we can't have athletic dorms. You're kind of on your own, you know, so that's what the impetus for it. And then things would happen, Andy, like we would go play LSU in Baton Rouge and Coach Tuberville's first LSU game. And we smoked the cigars and everybody knows the story. But what people probably don't know about the backstory is that the SEC sent a letter to Coach Tuberville after that, talking about how we had all broken the SEC tobacco policy because we were all, you know, on a field with a tobacco product. And then the NCAA sent a letter the next day and deemed us all ineligible because we had all received a gift from the program. And unless we all, and they determined that that gift was worth $1. And so until we all paid $1 to one of the administrators at the university, then we would have all been ineligible to play the next week against Ole Miss. And so when you're seeing things like that on the back end and you know that that stuff's not really getting out to the public eye, then you start thinking, I think people would really be interested in this. And that's where the idea.
What was the reaction to the book?
It was mostly pretty good. You know, I wrote the book the year after I was done playing. I kept a journal my senior year. And so from the first day of spring training of my senior year all the way until the Florida Citrus Bowl, I would periodically go in and just write things. And I did it because I wanted to remind myself of what all had taken place when I sat down to write it. I ended up writing it as I was training for the NFL Combine over in Atlanta just at night. I just had a laptop and I would just sit there and write it. And I probably did it in about six months. I couldn't get it published. That was the biggest issue. In fact, for 4 years, nothing happened with it. It just sat on my laptop. And it wasn't until I moved to Birmingham, the week I moved to Birmingham for optometry school, I was listening to Paul Feinbaum on the radio. And he had on a guy that had written a book about his time at Alabama. And the title of the book was called Crimson Slide. And it was the downfall of Alabama football under Mike Dubose or something like that. And this guy had been a walk-on holder that played one spring training, and he had written a book and had it published. And he's interviewing this guy, and I'm listening to it, and I can't believe it. I can't believe that this guy has actually been able to get a book published. And so when they go to break, I sent a message to Paul, and I said, Paul, I said, I've written a book about my time at Auburn. I said, I've not been able to find a publisher, but, you know, I think I've got an interesting story to tell. I played under two coaches. I played four different positions in four different years. Would love the opportunity. Well, he came back from the break and said, "We're going to Pat. Let's get Rob Pate booked for this Friday, because we're going to talk about a book." And the guy that was on that had written the book for Alabama had not been able to really defend his book very well, and Paul was kind of giving him a hard time. And that guy said he had been drinking a lot when he was writing the book and that he had to edit out like 10,000 words or something. And so it was a train wreck of an interview. And so Paul was kind of wanting to throw him under the bus a little bit anyways. But long story short, he had me on his program. When I got back home, I had three different publishing companies that wanted to do the book. The publishing company that actually did it, they had sent me a rejection letter 4 years prior. So it was really just about, again, timing and having the right people make the calls and the placement.
When did you start thinking about optometry?
Well, I had always been affected by optometry because I had poor eyes. My first pair of glasses was in the second grade. Went to be a contact lens wearer as a seventh grader because my glasses wouldn't fit under my helmet any longer. You know, I knew the impact that it had made in my own life. I really didn't consider it as a profession until about my sophomore year. I got a job one summer here at Auburn as a physical therapy assistant at the hospital. I was a pre-physical therapy student when I first got to Auburn and thought that's what I wanted to do. I thought every patient was going to be Bo Jackson and Michael Jordan, and every patient was my grandmother with a total hip and knee replacement. And so it was just a miserable, really, the setting. I should have been more of an athletic type of setting. I was in an inpatient hospital setting. Medicare had just cut reimbursement to physical therapists by almost half for some of the things they were doing. And so they were just bad mouthing their profession. I was hating that all my patients were crying when I went in to see them. And so I was looking for something else to do. And I talked to Dr. Goodlett about kind of where I was and what I was thinking. And he suggested that I go and spend some time with the doctor that at the time was the team optometrist for Auburn. And so he let me shadow him a little while, and I just really enjoyed it. You know, it was kind of old hat for me because I knew the experience, having grown up, been affected by optometry in a positive way. And we never looked back. It's been great. Every patient's unique. The visual demands of people are, you know, there's just so many. There's not many professions that you can combine healthcare, you know, quality of vision, the most important sense that, that we all have, the sense of sight, but also there's a fashion component to it. There's a business component to it. You know, there's an empathy component to it. You know, I enjoy every day that I get to go to work.
Where has that route taken you?
I started work in Birmingham when I first got out of school, and I worked at an eye care facility in Hoover for 9 years and really enjoyed it. I mean, had a great partner and, you know, enjoyed the area. I saw a lot of people that I had grown up with. And so it was just a great place to begin my career. But we got bought in 2015 by a private equity firm, which has happened throughout healthcare. I mean, and it's not just, I mean, it's all healthcare providers. Dentists are being purchased, optometry, vets, you know, cardiology practice. If you look, there's a lot of consolidation. There's a lot of private equity that's coming in to buy a lot of these places. And a lot of it has to do with the burden of running a business. It has to do with healthcare costs that have gone up. It has to do with student debt. Students don't have the money to be able to buy practices. So there's a glut in practitioners being able to sell their practices to younger doctors. And so the private equity groups have come in and they've taken over that role in many areas. It just wasn't a good deal for a young provider. And so when that happened, I started looking at other options. I had known about a great practice here in Auburn that I always thought that I was going to go back to when I got out of school, and we just never could get together and make that happen. But when this private equity sale took place, I got in touch with Brett Basden here in town. And I mean, he'd been over backwards to get us down here. I drove Andy every day from Birmingham to Auburn for 9 months to be at this practice. And I had to. I had a 25-mile non-compete radius from 18 locations in the state of Alabama. I would have had to go on to court to work. And, you know, I just didn't want to have to do that. It's been a blessing. Today is my 5-year anniversary of being in Auburn and, you know, having our kids here, being in this town. You know, it's a special place, and I can be so much more active with the things that my kids participate in. I could have never coached my kids in all their sports. I could have never been involved in my church as I am in Birmingham, just because everything's so spaced out there. Traffic's so bad there. And being you know, in a tight-knit place, it has meant the world to my family.
I've talked with a lot of people, and not just student-athletes like yourself, but folks that went to Auburn or maybe were from Auburn, moved away, and have come back. Either to retire or career has brought them back. And you're in that boat. So let me ask you this question. What is your view of Auburn, not only the university, but the city of Auburn now as an adult, someone that is in business, who has a family, is involved in the schools and athletics and that kind of thing? How has your view of Auburn changed from your time as an athlete as to what you are now?
Just thinking about that as you're asking that question, I mean, I literally get tears in my eyes because it is such a special place. And, you know, it's funny because when we left Auburn, I never wanted to come back to Auburn. I used to tell people, I don't want to raise my family in Auburn. And they would say, why? And I would say, well, for two reasons. I have 3 girls. I don't want to raise my kids in a college town because there's too many opportunities to choose poorly. That's what I thought. And then the second reason was I want them to go to Auburn. And I'm afraid that if they grow up in Auburn, they're going to want to go off to college like we did. And we've moved back, and my oldest daughter chose to go to Auburn. And the crazy thing is that we go to church at Auburn Community Church, and these college students that I thought were going to be such terrible influences on my kids were the ones that have mentored my kids, that have shown them that you can go to college and you can live a life that is pleasing to Jesus Christ, that is true to who you are, and still have a blast and still have fun, you know, and the importance of that. I mean, I can't overstate that. It's been everything to us. The city of Auburn has been, you know, phenomenal. You know, I saw Ron Anders this past week. I mean, how often do you get to just run into your mayor in the weight room, you know, and I saw Mayor Anders, and I told him, you know, again, almost with tears in my eyes, You know, I'm just appreciative of you. I'm appreciative that in a time where you realize the importance of local officials and the power that they can wield in your life, that, you know, that you're not on the list of one of these mayors that, you know, in a city that has totally just blown it, you know, and he's just so appreciative of the support that he gets. And, you know, I mean, and you go all the way down the list. I mean, it's just people take pride in living here. You know, I think about, you know, even a story like yours, where, you know, you step in to a situation that you couldn't have even fathomed in your worst nightmare. And here you are, you know, you step up and you do it because the connectivity that you've had because of Auburn, but because of the love that you have for your brother. And I can't even imagine how many people have reached out to you guys from a community standpoint to be there in any way that you could possibly be. You know, there's just story after story of things that just blow your mind. And I'm just so grateful and really feel kind of silly that I would have ever said that I wouldn't have wanted to come back.
All right. Give me all the kids, all your kids.
So Claire is my oldest. She's 19. Ellie is my next oldest. She is 15. Jenna is the eighth grader. She's 13. And then James and John David are both 11. They're fifth graders.
And your wife?
My wife's name is Dana, and she teaches second grade at Dean Road.
Do you miss playing football?
I don't. And that shocks people sometimes. And the reason why is because I don't miss doing the things that it took to be able to play at a high level. You know, like right now, my daughter, you know, she had a geometry test today and an English test today. And she played a volleyball match last night. She had to get up this morning for 5 a.m. workouts. And I don't miss that kind of stuff. I don't miss it at all. And to do it at the level that it required with guys like Kevin Yoxel and the demanding nature of the coaches that we had and the level that you were going to participate at under the spotlight that you were under. No, I don't miss mat drills. I don't miss spring training. I don't miss summer conditioning. I don't miss that at all. I love it. Now, I'll tell you this. I miss it when they line up to play games like they'll play this week. When I see them standing on the field against a team like Georgia or Alabama or LSU or Florida, then you feel that sense of, man, I wish I could be there. You know, I wish that I could lock arms with somebody and run out onto that field and represent Auburn. But I don't miss what it takes to be them. And I wouldn't trade with them any other time other than maybe to cover a kick. And then I'll go back, slink off to the sideline or to my couch, preferably.
All right, final question. And this is typically my last question. As you look back on it, what did Auburn and what does Auburn University mean to you and Dana and the kids?
Well, it means everything to us, Andy. You know, it's provided so many opportunities that that otherwise would have never come about. I see that and appreciate that every day. You know, both my wife and I are first generation college graduates. And, you know, to think about, you know, something as simple as even this year where we talk about maybe we shouldn't play sports, maybe we should take a reprieve from this. The opportunities that young men and women get to be able to walk onto a campus like Auburn University that otherwise would never come their way if it were not for the God-given athletic ability that they've been given, it's life-changing. And my kids will go to college, you know. My parents couldn't say that with the confidence that I say that now. You know, the traits and the characteristics and, you know, the hard work that you learn at a place like Auburn, the family identity that you take with you from a place like Auburn, the fact, the unity, regardless of where you stand politically, where you stand from your racial makeup, your socioeconomic status, everybody has an affinity for Auburn University and the town of Auburn, you know, and to be able to share that on a daily basis, it's just unbelievable.
Thank you for telling your story today. I certainly appreciate it. Wish you all the best to you. War Eagle, Rob.
Appreciate the opportunity. War Eagle, Andy.
For Dr. Rob Pate and the Talking Tigers podcast, presented by Wickles Pickles, I'm Andy Burcham. Be strong and be courageous. War Eagle.